This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. April Davila's first book will be released tomorrow. If you pick it up to give it as a gift, be sure to tuck a colorful, flowy feather inside as a bookmark. The title of the novel is 142 Ostriches. It is set on an ostrich farm in the Mojave Desert. April lives in Southern California. She came to Sacramento last week, and we recorded a conversation about her novel's storyline, about her central character, Tallulah. And my first question was, why ostriches?
That is usually the first question. Yeah, so the answer is that when I began writing the story, it was loosely based on my mom's experiences growing up in Elk Grove. She grew up on a dairy farm, her grandmother's dairy farm. And I loved the desert. So I was looking for a way to kind of combine the idea of a farm, but set it in the Mojave Desert, those two things together. I asked my mom if it was possible that there would be a dairy farm in the Mojave, and she laughed at me. She said, no. And then I was being stubborn trying to find some kind of farm in the desert. I was just Googling and I came across the OK Corral Ostrich Farm.
Wow.
In the Mojave Desert. It was 60 miles from my front door. And I just had this impulse of, I have to go there. I have to check it out. And I drove out there and I just instantly, like as soon as I got there, knew that this was the place I was going to set my story. Because the birds, they're such a study in contradictions. They're like scaly and almost dinosaur-like in their skin, but then they have these beautiful eyelashes like supermodels. And they're graceful, but they're deadly. They're just all these contradictions about them. And my story has a lot of contradictions in it. It's family, but in the way that family does, there's betrayal and there's love and there's anger and there's hope and there's all these things that kind of come together. And it just seemed like a really fitting place for the story.
What did you know about ostriches before you went to the farm?
Very little. I know a lot now. I've learned quite a bit.
You do know a lot now. And actually, it's surprising how much there is to know about ostriches.
They're actually really fascinating animals. And I learned really recently, actually, that they may not be as dumb as we thought. There was a recent study, I think it was Scientific American, wrote a piece about how bird brains are actually wired differently than mammalian brains. And so when they took away the mammalian bias and looked at bird brains, they actually think they may not be as dumb as we thought they were. Hmm. That didn't make it into the story. I just read that. So,
What did the farmer tell you about ostriches? And what did he want you to know or to prioritize in understanding the birds?
He was so helpful. I mean, he alone was such an interesting character. He had been an investment banker in New York in the 80s and then kind of had it with the whole mentality, bought two pairs of breeding ostriches, shipped them to his mom's backyard in San Diego and said, just hold on to them for a while. Bought a big chunk of land, started from scratch, didn't know a thing about ostriches, just decided this is what he was going to do. So he told me all these stories about the learning curve, which was really helpful for me in the characters that I was writing, of things, just basic ostrich care, you know, how to keep them from kicking you, because they kick forward. Their knees bend forward. Ours bend back, theirs bend forward. So they're very good at kicking when they're unhappy. But if you grab their beaks and pull their beaks low, they can't kick because they kick themselves. Mm. So little things like that, like you have to pull their heads down if you want them to not kick you, or just their behaviors. He had so many birds and he knew everyone by name. They all have really individualized characteristics and personalities.
You represent that well in the book.
Thank you.
In fact, are any of the birds in the book modeled after any of the birds you saw there?
Not
specifically. There's one Abigail that just runs freely. She can't really be contained.
Yes. She actually was a holdover from an earlier draft where she had a larger role, but this is a bird who gets injured. And one of the things about ostriches is they tend to single out any differences. And so if you have a bird who has like a limp or something that's different, the birds will kind of gang up on them. Mm. And so this character of the bird kind of evolved to be this outsider who lives outside of the corral and kind of is a pet on the farm.
How much time did you end up spending there? Because the layers of this farm and all that happens to the birds run really deep in your book.
Well, thank you. I did a lot of research at home and online. And then when I hit walls of not understanding, I would go and spend a day with, his name was Doug Osborne. He recently passed away. Sadly, I didn't get to give him a copy of the book. Mm. But he was very generous with his time. So I would go out, I'd buy him lunch at the local cafe and ask him all my questions. I probably spent about 3 whole days out there in total, which doesn't sound like much considering how much I've absorbed about ostriches over the years.
I'm talking with April Davila. Her first novel is titled 142 Ostriches. Ostriches can be farmed for different reasons, as I've learned in your book. Sometimes it's for eggs, sometimes it's not, shall
yes.
we say.
Yeah. Ostrich leather is actually a very prized leather. It's gorgeous, though I've kind of resisted buying it now that I've developed such an affection for the birds. So the leather is an export, the feathers. In fact, the birds are actually near extinction into the 19th century. And then women's hats, women started using their feathers in the hats. And a few enterprising farmers in South Africa mostly started farming the birds and rebuilding the populations because they could make a fortune on the feathers. The women would pay, I mean, just absurd amounts. But if you look at, you know, the annual income and how much women were paying for feathers for their hats, it's kind of absurd. And then what happened is World War I started and exports became much harder to do. And then the rise of the automobile made hats shrink. Mm. And so the big feathers didn't fit in an automobile and the fashions changed. But thankfully, ostriches were saved from extinction.
All of this is important to understand because early in the story, Grandma Helen has died suddenly. And her granddaughter, Tallulah, your central character, has to assume the work of the ranch, which she's not sure whether she really right. wants to do.
Right. Yes. So, in fact, she is pretty sure she doesn't want to do it. She wants to, she has other plans. She's been offered a job in Montana. She's planning to leave when Grandma Helen dies. And so her first instinct is to sell and continue on with her life. But she has very torn feelings about that, very mixed emotions.
Would you read a bit from the book?
I would love to.
And we get a sense of Tallulah being on the farm and the ostriches.
So this is a short segment where she is thinking about the act of selling. And the person she's planning to sell to is named Joe Jared. He's also an ostrich rancher down in Yuma and has been wanting to buy the farm for some time. I ran my hands over the eggs, cool and clean on the shelves. When we first brought them in from outside, they were warm and covered in the fine silt of the corral floor. We dunked each one in a bucket of water, wiped it clean, polished it to a shine, and set it on the shelf with the others, where they ceased to be a part of nature and became product. All lined up against the metal interior of the cooler like that, their repetitive curves were mesmerizing. In a way, it was regrettable that they would never grow into their potential as enormous ostriches, but if even a fraction of them were allowed to hatch, we would soon be overrun by the flock. It was better to maintain balance. With 142 birds, we made enough to cover our expenses and put a little into savings, and that was enough. I rested my palm on the curve of an egg. Joe Jared wouldn't settle for enough. He would cram the corral with birds until he had a steady stream of hatchlings bound for the slaughterhouse. It would be a very different ranch.
Is Tallulah a character that you remember or see or find in yourself? You said the story is about your mom, but I wonder if it carried into your life experience too.
Yeah, I feel like any character is always kind of a mishmash of real life people. And one of the real life people is inevitably me because I bring my own background, my own history into my writing. I would say it's an amalgam. It's part my mom, part me, part my aunt. There's all these women that I grew up with that if you smush them all together, you kind of get my main character.
The cover of this book is colorful. It's a mosaic of feathers. And just the title, 142 Ostriches, feels like it has some maybe whimsy or delight to it. The surprise in your story is that the characters, who are very clear, have very complex lives. And the kids who were born to Grandma Helen and her alcoholic husband have each chosen very different paths for coping with the struggle of that family life.
Yeah.
Is that the story you set out to tell?
You know, I didn't realize it at first, but I think it was. I'm fascinated by how people deal with the traumas in their lives. And I don't think anyone doesn't have trauma. There's big traumas, little traumas. We all have struggles. And I think what is interesting, what makes us uniquely us, is how we deal with those things. So I have one character who turns towards religion, one who turns towards alcohol, one drugs. They have their own life philosophies and ways that they've made sense of a chaotic world.
Hmm. You and I first met at a community of writers conference in Squaw Valley a few summers ago, and you were working on this book.
I was.
At the time.
What part were you workshopping? Was there a place in the story that you were trying to hurdle or make more clear?
You know, at that point, it was pretty much done. I was working with my agent. I had done some edits, but I would say it was mostly done at that point. Yeah, it's been a long road for publication. It was funny. My agent picked it up in a week. You know, I queried him on a Monday, and by Friday, he was repping me. We were both really excited about the project. And then when we were shopping it around, we just got a lot of conflicting feedback. Some editors loved the story but couldn't get behind the characters. Some loved the characters, didn't quite get the story. And I asked my agent, you know, should I do more revisions? And he said, no, it just needs to find the right home. And then it did. And so I don't think that's terribly unusual as publication stories go, that it takes, you know, publishing's a harsh world these days. And I think editors...
Say more about the journey in getting this book to the point where it's ready to be birthed, to be released.
Yeah. Well, it was a long road in terms of actually writing the story, because I had this instinct that I wanted to write something, but I didn't really know what it was. And so I just wrote draft after draft. I would get to the end of a draft and have ideas and go back and rewrite. I just rewrote it over and over. Like 8 years I spent rewriting it.
And this is before The Ostrich Farm?
It always started on The Ostrich Farm, but there was a version where she became an outlaw. My main character was so ridiculous. I just didn't know what I wanted it to be. And then over the years, I kind of narrowed in on a story that felt more true. Less
I think
fantastical.
You just said, I just didn't know what I wanted to be.
Did I say that?
That's what it sounded like.
Play the tape back.
Isn't that
I wouldn't be surprised, because I feel like that's when the story came together for me, is when I kind of came to understand myself a lot better. I became a parent in those years. I started meditating. I quit drinking. I took some time to get to know myself a little better. And I feel like that was how my story found its place too.
I love the idea of this book, simply as I said from the title, 142 Ostriches. I don't know if you remember the conversation we had in Squaw Valley, but I was saying to you, you know, the ostrich is the bird that gets teased about, number one, being dumb, but putting its head in the sand and being oblivious. And the book has so much depth and so much reality that I found myself looking for the parallels, and they're there, between that definition of the ostrich and what the characters were doing.
Well, and you know what's funny is I was writing this book for 8 years before I realized I was writing a story about a young woman who needed to pull her head out of the sand and take a good look at her life and decide what was important. And as I realized that was what I was writing, it all just kind of clicked into place. I did one more pass, and that was the draft I sent out to agents.
So you do have some funny descriptions. Do you mind?
No, please.
His boots squeaked against the metal rungs of the truck as he climbed down. I marveled at the blatant size of him, built like an ox with a glandular problem. He had broad shoulders that lifted his 6'4" frame, where most men either tapered or bulged in the middle. His body melted down into two gigantic tree trunks, and they were his legs. Can I do one more?
Yeah, please.
But he held himself as comfortably as a crow on a crowded tree branch, surprisingly at ease for someone with such a sordid history. I love it.
Thank you.
You have a connection with nature that I can tell you didn't just find in the Mojave Desert.
Well, I was an ecology major at Scripps College.
Okay.
I've always loved being outside. Yeah, that's a through line in my life for sure.
Hmm. Do you want to read another part about the desert?
Sure.
And again, we go to some of your poetic writing about the outdoors.
As quietly as I could, I unlatched the front door and slipped outside. The landscape was cast in silver tones, and I moved away from the house to see the moon shining down impossibly large. A strong wind whistled low and steady over the land. It wrapped my nightshirt against my body, and I could hear the creaking of a nearby sage plant as a gust of air slammed the branches. Sand blew against the side of the barn with a sound like scratching claws. Another flurry of wind blew my hair into my face, reminding me of the way my mom used to tousle my bangs when I was a kid. With both hands, I smoothed my hair back over my head, enjoying the tickle of warm air as it slipped through the sleeves of my nightshirt.
That's from 142 Ostriches, the debut novel by April Davila. Let's say a bit about the storyline with Tallulah. There's a lot that we shouldn't give away in the story, but she goes from this point about being unsure of the sale of the farm mm-hmm. to a whole lot of discovery and a whole lot of family events.
Yeah. What can I tell you about it? I mean, I feel like that's what coming of age is, right? Seeing your world with a slightly different perspective, maybe a slightly more worldly perspective, having some experiences that teach you things aren't as simple as we think they are when we're young. Mm. Yeah.
It seems like her story could go on after the book. Have you thought about that?
I have thought about it and decided that I will not be writing more. I love this story for what it is, and I feel like I found a good place to end it. It's funny because as I was writing it, I mean, I've written backstory. I wrote Grandma Helen's story. I wrote the children's story. I've written before and after this book, but this is the story that needed to be on the page.
Are you writing another story, a different
one? I am. Yeah. I actually just finished a draft of book number 2. Still a little rough, but hoping to have it done by the end of the year so my agent can start chopping it around.
Any hints?
It's the quick pitch right now is it's an epic. It covers 300 years. It's about a couple that doesn't age until they have children. So we meet them in the 1700s, and they have this spell that they're under that allows them to be more or less invincible. I just like the idea of having characters who are, they're not superheroes, they're not out to save anybody, but what would it be like to live through so much time, so much change? And then my female character, her biological clock is ticking for, you know, 250 years, she wants to have a baby. But then that debate of, well, if we have a baby, we have to settle down. It's a big metaphor for having children and how I never noticed I was aging until I had kids. And then you're celebrating their first birthday and you're like, but I haven't aged. And you have to suddenly like acknowledge that you are mortal and you are aging. And
so true.
What a transition that is in life.
So true. So is there a place on earth that you go to think about that story, the way you found the ostrich farm in the desert?
Yes. Well, it's a California story. So I've been traveling up and down California. Part of it's in Northern California, part of it's Southern California. The characters do travel quite a bit. There's a chapter set in Seattle. They travel all through Europe. Sadly, I can't take a year and just, you know, follow their footsteps, but I have done as much actual going to the places as I could.
Are you visiting the old homestead in Elk Grove when you come through Sacramento?
I was thinking about going right after this. My family, all the way back to my great-great-grandfather who came directly from Germany in the 1880s, they're all buried in one cemetery that was cut in half by the five, actually, in Elk Grove.
Wow.
And I was thinking if I have time after this, I would go visit before I head back down to L.A.
Hmm. Well, you're full of stories.
Oh, thank you.
April, thanks so much for the in-person visit and congratulations on this first novel.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
That was my conversation with April Davila. Her debut novel, 142 Ostriches, will be launched in paperback tomorrow, February 25th. She has a reading in San Francisco this Saturday afternoon at 2 at Books, Inc., the Civic Center location, which is on Van Ness. She will also be in Santa Rosa on Monday, March 2nd. That's an evening event, 7 p.m. at Copperfields Books in Montgomery Village. So in the book, Tallulah's mom tells her about her life philosophy, which she calls the whiskey glass theory. At the end of the acknowledgments in April's book, she writes, "Finally, thank you to Mrs. Lehman, my AP English teacher at Montgomery High School, the best writing teacher I ever had, and from whom I stole the idea of the whiskey glass theory. She called it the birthday cake theory. I hope she'll forgive me for making it my own." Don't we love recognizing the great teachers in our life? So thanks again, April. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. On Wednesday, to look ahead a little bit, PolitiFact California reporter Chris Nichols will cover some of the confusing and sometimes wrong information that's going around about voting in California's primary. Primary day is next Tuesday, March 3rd. So thanks for joining us, and wherever you are, remember to vote.